This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, Scotch potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies Get Out, Collide, Rock Dog, Bitter Harvest, and You're Killing Me, Susanna. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, box office predictions, home cinema roundup, and of course, my own personal Big Six Oscar predictions. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Just a couple pieces of news, because I'm gonna do the Oscar stuff at a later point in the show. I've gotten this question a couple times on other radio programs that I've been on where they're like, is this going to be an Oscar? We're going to get a whole bunch of Meryl Streep Golden Globe speeches. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're going to get that. I mean, this is Hollywood, and this is a time where a lot of people with certain political ideologies are going to be speaking out. And this is going to probably be something that's going to be very hard for people to resist. Meryl Streep couldn't resist it during the Golden Globes. That was her time. She could talk about it. Or even had Aaron Sorkin winning the Writers Guild Award, and he took the time to talk about the state of politics this year. You're gonna get that. You just deal with it, you know. And if you don't want to hear that, don't watch the Oscars. And if it, you know, because I think there's a lot of people out there who don't actually watch the Oscars. They just hear about some speech and then they get outraged about it. I really don't know how many people are out there waiting with bated breath to see how well La La Land does or Fences or Arrival, and suddenly is going to get blindsided by a political speech. You're going to get that. Just realize that, okay? And I'll comment on those when they come up next week, because there's going to be several of them. I'm just going to warn you right now. The other pieces of news are actually relatively minor pieces of news. One of them, well, it's minor in terms of, you know, the structure of the way entertainment works and what to expect, but it's kind of big news for me. The Mystery Science Theater 3000 revival has now got a release date, and it is going to be arriving on Netflix on April 14th. Which is awesome, because that's like the day before you have to file your taxes. So it should prompt you to do your taxes earlier, so you have time to watch Mystery Science Theater, kick back and enjoy it on Netflix, and not have to worry about getting your taxes filed so that then you can't get paid your return when the government shuts down at the end of April. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this new MST. I'm not dying for it, because I'm not a huge fan of Felicity Day. I respect her because of her geek attitude and the fact that, yeah, she's a bit of a geek icon, but she's also a geek. She's a little bit of like a female Will Wheaton. I'm just not a huge fan of her, but I'm curious to see what she does. I'm interested to see how she chews the scenery in a show like this. But yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see if they can recapture that magic that had to get recaptured a couple times on the show, like at least twice. The next piece of news, and this is one I've been railing against this for years, Jeepers Creepers 3. Is apparently going to start filming, and it's allegedly going to be released this year. Now, it's been in development for a while, and I know that there are certain people out there who are huge Jeepers Creepers fans. I have never been able to get behind the series based on the mere fact that there's a pedophile rapist who is behind it. The guy who directed it and wrote it, Victor Salva, he's a child rapist and a pedophile. And yeah, he served like 18 months for molesting a kid on his first film, Clown House. Now you can sit there and say, well, he paid his debt to society. If you're going to jail for like 30 years for pot possession, but you're going to rape a child, and you go to year and a half, that's. But the thing that's always bothered me about Jeepers Creepers, because I never watched the movie Powder because of him, and I swerved into Jeepers Creepers because I just saw it on a video shelf once, and I watched it not knowing who directed it. My problem with Jeepers Creepers, if you watch the movies, it's about a predator who literally consumes and devours in an orgasmic way young, good-looking, usually underage teenage boys, which is essentially what he did as his crime. And when I saw Jeepers Creepers 2, I said, whether this guy went to jail or not, it is clear he's not over his problem. It is clear that this is something he is still obsessed with. And I think the only thing keeping him possibly not raping other children is the fact that he's kind of high profile on this. If he was just some plumber somewhere, I think he probably would be still doing it. But the fact that's the subject matter makes it so unsavory. If you know his story and you know what he did in his case, and then you watch the Jeeper Creepers movies, it's kind of disturbing. So, you know, first it's politically incorrect to punch Nazis in the face, and now we continue to have pedophiles making movies about their own problems that is wrapped in a little horror story. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to play is for King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. It opens on May 12th.
Why is the water dropped? Why does the sword reveal itself now?
As your power increases, so do the forces that will oppose you. The born king will come. It is inevitable.
This is directed by Guy Ritchie. And, I've seen a chunk of his movies. I never saw Swept Away, which is that one he did with Madonna, and I had no interest in that. But I've seen several of his movies, and I end up liking his movies in spite of the fact that I think he's kind of, not the greatest guy, and he's kind of a talented filmmaker. I mean, not like Victor Salva. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, Victor Salva is a rapist. Guy Ritchie just seems to be somewhat of a blowhard. But I end up seeing his movies like Sherlock Holmes. I kind of liked. I like the Sherlock Holmes movies, and King Arthur. I'm curious to see what he does with King Arthur. The trailer's sort of stupid because it has some modern music playing in it, which is the thing you do in trailers now and never have it in the movie itself. We saw that with the Assassin's Creed trailer, but his movies can be kind of fun. So I'm curious to see what this looks like. I mean, it does look like your standard. Everything's oh so dirty in the Middle Ages, and I know that's the way it was, but it just starts to look grimy after a while. Anyway, we'll see. I'm kind of looking forward to this simply because it's a big summer movie, but it's sort of like that second weekend of May, so it may not be. It might be the dip instead of the hill. The other one I want to talk about is Alien Covenant. Now, it's not the trailer. It's actually the prologue. They posted online. All you do is go to Google and search Alien Covenant prologue. And you can watch. It's a 5-minute video about the crew of the ship, the Covenant, getting ready to go into suspended animation. It sort of gives you a little bit of a taste of who's who and, some neat little things in it. But ultimately, it's there to serve as a introduction to the movie.
Jake asked me to say something, but it's okay.
Please.
You've all sacrificed so much to be here. To be a part of this. It's the first ever large-scale colonization mission to go this far into our galaxy. I'm making history. I just want to say I couldn't pick a better bunch of jerks to get marooned on a distant planet with. So, to the Covenant!
To the Covenant!
I'm looking forward to this. I'm not a huge fan of was her name, Catherine Waterston, who stars in it. She annoys me. I'm not a big fan of her work, but I find it interesting. They've got Danny McBride and James Franco in here. So those seems like odd casting choices, but it's also kind of cool that they've got, of course, Michael Fassbender back, and you get to see him in action, and not knowing exactly what model he is. So, again, Alien Covenant, I loved Prometheus, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what this one has to offer. And it opens on May 19th, the week after King Arthur. That is it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Collide and Bitter Harvest. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the movie reviews. Let's start with what is not going to be a big movie at all this weekend, and that is Collide. A former car thief gets mixed up with the biggest drug dealer in Germany when he tries to run a heist to pay for his girlfriend's surgery.
Casey's time. I believe I have something you want.
They're going to kill the love of my life.
I can go back to what I was doing.
You have come back.
I knew it.
He's big time car thief in America. I need someone like you.
Is it dangerous?
Of course it's dangerous!
Some people would think what I did was kind of like romantic.
I mean, it's kind of romantic.
First of all, just my general impressions of the movie. It's stupid. It's a disposable kind of movie that you'd maybe watch on Showtime or Cinemax if you're surfing around on a Saturday afternoon and you don't want to go outside. And you're just bored. And it actually kind of works that way. I mean, it really feels like a direct-to-video movie. It does not feel like something that should be coming out in theaters. But with that in mind, I wasn't unentertained. I mean, it served its purpose, I guess we can say. And I'm sure that's going to show up on the DVD cover box. It served its purpose. Kevin Carr, Fat Guys at the Movies. There's some weird things in this, though. The cast is full of British people. You've got Anthony Hopkins playing the bad guy in Germany, but he's British. You also have Ben Kingsley, who is playing another bad guy, and he's in Germany, and he's Turkish in the movie. And then you've got the stars, Nicholas Holt and Felicity Jones, both of whom are British, playing Americans in a movie that takes place in Germany. So I don't know why they just didn't make these characters... I know why. This is why they made Felicity Jones's character American, is because she has to get a kidney replaced. And that's the surgery she needs. Well, I mean, if you're British, they got the national health system that she could go home and work on that. But America doesn't have its health. I think the reason they do these gymnastics things is to deal with the fact that we don't have full socialized medicine in America the way you do in England or other parts of Europe. So I found that an interesting stumbling block of plotting. But, Felicity Jones, I love Felicity Jones, and she's really kind of hot in this one because she's blonde and, she doesn't act much in it. She's not given much to do, but she just looks adorable in it. And I have a thing for Felicity Jones. And Nicholas Holt, I didn't like him when he was on Skins, 10, 15 years ago, back, it was a British TV show, but I actually have liked him in a bunch of other movies. You know, he's in like stuff like Warm Bodies, and he plays the young version of Beast, who was Kelsey Grammer plays in the X-Men movies. And he was also in Mad Max Fury Road a couple years ago. So it's a good cast. And then you also have these two Academy Award worthy actors, Anthony Hopkins and Ben Kingsley, and they have a couple scenes together, and you're just, and the first one they have together, you're just like, this is amazing having these two powerhouse actors, and they do what they can with the lines, which are kind of garbage, But it's just neat to see them across. You don't see that very often. You don't see them in movies together. So you got to go to this garbage action movie to see a deliciously acted scene between Anthony Hopkins and Ben Kingsley. But both of them have done their crap. And this is one of their craps. This is one of the things that they use to build a summer home in Belize or something like that, where they get paid a certain amount of money and you know, for a couple days of work. It's not a good movie, but it's entirely passable. And I remember it reminded me of that movie, The Cold Light of Day. That was one that starred Henry Cavill before he did Superman. So he was still sort of somewhat unknown. And Bruce Willis was in it, and like Sigourney Weaver. I actually know the guy who wrote the movie. It wasn't a bad little action film, but it fizzled. Nobody saw it. But it felt like something that would have been written for Roll Rene for a direct-to-video release and not a major motion picture. But that one came out in September. This one came out in February on kind of an off weekend. It's not a good movie, but it's entertaining. It's disposable, but, you know, don't pay full price for this one. So I'm going to actually have to say, surprisingly, Collide kind of rocked.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Bitter Harvest. This historical film takes a look at a family trying to survive and keep their dignity during Joseph Stalin's genocidal starvation of the Ukraine in the 1930s.
Ukraine must be taught to bow to our will. Without its vast harvests of grain, Russia cannot exist. Take all their food.
This would mean the death of millions.
I have seen people left to die.
This is not a famine. This is starvation. I must fight for my country.
Close the borders. Keep them in.
Sort of like Collide, Bitter Harvest feels like it's a TV movie. It just has that feel to it. It feels like something you would have caught on like an original History Channel or maybe even a Hallmark movie. It has a cheesiness underneath it. And part of it's the actors. I don't even know the guy who plays the main Ukrainian character, who then he goes to Kiev to go to university so he can become an artist. And that's how he's going to, in a way, rebel against the world. And he joined the communists there. But of course, you know, Stalin starts cracking down on a lot of people. But it's at its heart, it's about how Stalin handled Ukraine back in the 30s, in which it was this massive starvation, as wide and sweeping as Germany's Holocaust was. This one, I think, actually has a higher body count. I mean, they basically cordoned off an entire country and came in and just took everybody's stuff. And because it was a breadbasket, that was known as the breadbasket of Russia. And that's what fed all of Russia. And they just took it away from these people and left them with nothing. I mean, there's one point where he's like, take it all. I'm like, well, wait, if you take it all, they're all going to die, which was kind of the point. But then who's going to work the land? I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of like intricacies of the politics and how this would work and why this was a bad economic thing to do. But none of that is really addressed. It's all more the character study of that, like this guy who goes to Kiev and then he gets put in jail and he has to escape to try and see his family and his wife back home and her having to deal with the fact that they're starving and they have to kill their horses so they can eat, but then they can't, you know, plow the land, and how the Bolsheviks came in and just started, you know, indiscriminately killing people. I mean, it's not a happy-go-lucky movie, and any movie that's about crimes against humanity aren't exactly the kind of movies you want to put on to have a good chuckle, you know, unless you're insane. But it does shed a light on this massive crime against humanity that, from what I understand, really wasn't known to the West until after the fall of the Soviet Union in the early 90s. Because Stalin had gotten rid of the free press in Russia, and he controlled all the press in Russia. He didn't let this story get out. That's what happens in a dictatorship. You can do some great injustices and just hide them. And it's a horrible thing. Now, I mean, they could have gone really into misery porn with this. I mean, they really could have turned the screws on this. Pulls its punches a lot of times. So, I mean, you know how terrible it is, but it's not as bad as it could be. I mean, it's not as brutal as it could be. And there's also a lot of cheesiness behind it in terms of just sort of the structure and the characters and the interaction. It's not terribly well executed, but it is worth seeing for no other reason than to open your eyes to the atrocities that happened. So I'm going to have to say that Bitter Harvest kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Get Out and You're Killing Me, Susanna. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's continue with the movie reviews. Let's talk about Get Out. Jordan Peele writes and directs this horror film about a black man visiting his white girlfriend's family only to discover a terrifying secret.
What? Do they know I'm black?
Should they?
You might wanna, you know.
Mom and Dad, my black boyfriend will be coming up this weekend. Are you ready for this?
How bad can it be?
So look, I go do my research. Apparently, a whole bunch of brothers been missing in this suburb.
But it's cool.
Bro, how you not scared of this, man?
Could see another brother around here.
Get out.
Sorry, man. Okay.
Get out!
Yo! Mom, it's a terrible thing to waste.
For those who don't know who Jordan Peele is, you probably will recognize him. He's best known for comedy. He was one of the two main guys in Key and Peele, the Comedy Central sketch comedy show. And last year, they did the movie Keanu, if you remember that one about the cat. He's the shorter, chubbier one, and whereas Keegan-Michael Key's the taller, thinner one. And coming off the not-so-great success of Keanu, he's now doing a movie that's basically a straight-up horror movie. Now, it plays a satire, and it plays as an allegory to black perspective. And there are some comedic moments in there, some very funny moments that are thrown in order to break the tension, which is very, it's not uncommon in a horror film to have some extremely funny moments. That's there to, it breaks that tension. You build that tension, then you can break it. And then once you've broken that tension, you can then take the time to build it all the way back up, and you can do it very, very slowly and effectively. So this is not a comedy, even though there are some funny moments. This is a straight up chilling at times horror film. And the brilliance of it is, it does deconstruct the black experience. I mean, here we are. I've talked about the black experience, even though I'm not black, if you didn't know. So I don't know what it's like. I don't know what the black experience is like. The best I can get is what I get from movies. But I've talked about movies this month. It's Black History Month. Not just for that reason. Some of these were nominated for Academy Awards. I talked about I'm Not Your Negro. I've talked about 13th last week. And the reason it's important, and I keep pointing out the race thing, is because the race issues are woven intricately into the film and deeply into the film. It's impossible to talk about this movie without talking about race, as opposed to, say, something like Lethal Weapon, where Danny Glover's a black guy, but it's not about race. Or it's not like Will Smith when he did Concussion the other, you know, couple years ago that he was trying to win an Academy Award for. Those weren't necessarily about race. This one totally is. And then, of course, it's dealing with the issues of the black man having a white girlfriend and how that can be seen as lashing back at the race issue, as opposed to just the fact that there's a lot more white girls out there than black girls. The fact that black women don't like that when black men and traditionally don't like that. They bring that up in this movie. They don't like that when they see that as a guy going to the other side. It satirizes and is a bit of an allegory for how white people in a lot of ways will idolize black culture and black people and want to be them, but on their own terms. And in doing so, trying to adopt that culture at times, which doesn't always work and sometimes makes white people look foolish. But even with all that, the meaning in there, and it's sort of like Dawn of the Dead that George Romero directed back in 1978. That movie is a deconstruction of consumerism, and it's got symbolism of the mall and zombies wandering around the mall and eating their own and how there's no uniqueness and it just this mindless beast of consumerism. But you can also watch Dawn of the Dead and not get any of that. And it just works as a really cool, awesome zombie movie. And this one works as a really cool, awesome horror film about this guy having probably one of the worst weekends of his life. It's also just really well directed. I mean, Jordan Peele takes his time. He's not sloppy. And unlike a movie like Tusk, if you remember Tusk a couple of years ago, which is Kevin Smith's mess of what could have been a really gruesome body horror movie, but he abandons it in the middle of it and goes into this goofy, basal sort of comedy. Jordan Peele sticks to the message and he makes it work and he ties things up. And the thing I absolutely loved about it is they're these little stereotypes that are just dropped in there. Like all black people know each other. You know, we've seen that joke before. They work that into this as an interesting plot point. They also, where even the name Get Out is partly because feels like it's a reference to, I believe, Eddie Murphy's stand up from the 80s where he talks about Amityville Horror where the priest is told, get out. And he said, if it was a black guy, he would have just left immediately. And so there's a lot in this movie. But even if you don't want to look for that, it's kind of just a creepy, chilling, and a neat little horror movie that's worth checking out. So I'm going to have to say Get Out totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about You're Killing Me, Susanna. A middling Mexican actor travels to Iowa to chase down his wife who suddenly left him for a chance to develop her writing career.
Susanna?
IWS.
Can I speak with Susanna?
Oh, Susie. Let me transfer you to her room.
We need to know where you're staying in the United States. Come with me, sir. Welcome to the United States.
So where are you from?
Mexico.
You don't sound like no Mexican I know. Well, you look different. Better.
Surprise, Susie.
Hey, hey, no. This little game is over.
This is, it's a Mexican movie. I was able to pull the parts of the trailer that were in English, but a good chunk of it's in Spanish. And it's rolling its way around the country. It's in my hometown this week, at the Gateway Film Center, if you want to check it out there. But it opened, I think, in 2 weeks ago, in New York and LA, and it's slowly moving around the country. Obviously, it's going to have the most appeal to a Mexican American audience or an immigrant audience, because it is told from the Mexican perspective. It stars Gael Garcia Bernal, who most people will recognize having seen. He's done a lot of movies and there's no one role that you'd recognize him for, but you'd be like, I've seen that guy in a bunch of movies because he's an international actor. He does stuff in Mexico, but he also does stuff here in the States. It completely comes from a perspective that's obviously not American. And I think that the neatest things I found on it were, first of all, his perspective of what America was like. Because it's the first time he goes to America, and he goes from Mexico to like Iowa in the winter, which is a bad idea because it's really cold in Iowa in the winter, and Mexico is a desert. I think he's from Mexico City. I mean, that's way down south, and it does come from that. It comes from a different cultural perspective. There are things that reminded me a little bit of a French movie because there was a French movie I saw last year or the year before, and it dealt with this guy who was cheating on his girlfriend or wife, but when he thought she was cheating on him, he got really jealous. And that's sort of kind of the impetus of her moving is she keeps catching him with other girls. And then she moves to Iowa for a summer, doesn't tell him about it. And when he comes and finds her, he finds out that she's sleeping with this other guy and he's really jealous. And I'm like, well, you have no right to be. But see, that's a very common macho attitude. That's not just, it's not a Hispanic or European perspective. That comes in America. I've known guys. I actually knew a guy who was cheating on his wife. And when he thought she was cheating on her, he became super paranoid. And I'm kind of like, man, you really got nowhere to talk on this. But this is that's a natural reaction. So there's a certain amount of truth there that seems to be, it's more accepted in his character. If you made this character, in an American movie, they're sort of like that almost that remnants of the Hays Code of where the heroes have to reach a certain level of respect and morality that this would not fly as an American character. So it's interesting to see how a Mexican perspective would look at what it would be like to just travel to the Midwest. But it's also, it's a neat little romance comedy at times, but also more serious. And it's not at all a typical American or English language romance. It's definitely comes from a different perspective, but it's worth seeing for international cinema. I'm going to have to say You're Killing Me, Susanna kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Rock Dog, the Oscar predictions, weekly box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies, wrapping up the show with the final segment. Let's talk about the final movie, the new release of the week, the final new release of the week, and that is Rock Dog. This CGI animated film tells the story of a sled dog from the mountains who just wants to become a rock star.
I like it loud, I like it tight.
That boy is really starting to steam my clams.
From the co-director of Toy Story 2, when your dreams are this big...
Dad, I've decided to become a musician.
Well, that's just crazy talk.
Have you ever composed?
I have this one little something about a garbage truck.
Waste management, mate. It's not very rock and roll, is it?
If you could feel what I'm feeling, it's the answer to the question of my life.
I saw this trailer when I went and saw... that middle school movie. I took my two youngest sons. They were 8 and 13. And they both liked the movie. And I remember seeing the trailer for Rock Dog and thinking, this is garbage. This looks terrible. The animation doesn't look good. And what they did is they ended up getting a big cast. Because the reason you can get like big names, because it's got people like J.K. Simmons and it's got Luke Wilson. I thought it was Owen Wilson, but Luke Wilson's in it. I think Eddie Izzard's in it. They got quite a few big names in there. Well, that's because they say, hey, here's $50,000. Why don't you come here for a day's work in the studio and we'll put you in the movie. And I mean, even Luke Wilson, who's the main character, he's the dog. I'm sure he spent no more than 3 days doing this. He probably spent no more than 5 days even thinking about this movie. And that includes deciding to take it, reading the script, and doing whatever sort of preparation that he did for it. Now, that's just me speculating. Now, at first I thought it was Owen Wilson, who's done voiceover for cartoons. He did that Turkey movie a couple years ago. That was terrible. He, of course, is best known in the animation world for doing Lightning McQueen in the Cars movies. And they sound so similar, he and his brother. Luke. So I wasn't even thinking that it was Luke. I thought it was Owen Wilson from the beginning. But just this doesn't look like that interesting of a movie. It feels like it's sort of like not just hoodwinked. It's hoodwinked too. It's just it looks like such a stretch and such a cliched story of I'm going to leave home and become a rock musician. Isn't that awesome? I didn't see it. It was not screened. Now, I could have driven up to Cleveland early on a Saturday morning to see it, but I'm not going to drive 2.5 hours out of my way for Rock Dog when I had plenty of other movies to cover. In the end, I have no interest to see this movie. I don't think it's going to be any good, and I think it's going to drop like a stone this week. And the fact that they didn't screen it locally for me, but they screened that awful Legends of Oz a couple of years ago, shows that there's zero confidence in this film whatsoever. So it gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about the Oscars. I haven't talked much about the Oscars this year. And part of that is... I've just sort of seen this as kind of a lot of boring picks. I'm sad to say that, and I feel bad saying that. And I mean, there were some things that were surprised. I think people were surprised that Arrival got as much Oscar love and nominations as it did, although it didn't get a nomination for Amy Adams. It's not in the acting nominations, but it's up there for like Best Picture. I think it's a little bit of a surprise that like Mel Gibson finally got some Oscar love again with both a Best Picture and a Best Director nomination. Then there's a couple dark horses out there, like Viggo Mortensen for Captain Fantastic as a Best Supporting Actor. But overall, I think this is going to be extremely predictable. And if not predictable, it's like, well, you're going to have two or three movies that are, it could be any one of these three. But it's not all that exciting. I don't know if there's going to be any huge upsets here. There are no movies that were huge surprises. It's not like when Mad Max Fury Road was nominated, that was kind of a big deal a couple years ago. Not so much this time. So, but I'm just going to go through and I'm going to do the big six. I always do the big six, my predictions for who's going to win those. And then we'll talk about it next week. See how smart I am and how accurate I am. I'm not going to bother going down and saying who's going to win the best documentary short or anything like that. Even though I think it's going to be The White Helmets. But I'm not going to go through, you know, animated film is probably the only other one that I would really brush on. And I think it's going to be Zootopia. As much as I love Kubo and the Two Strings, and I really, 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 really wish it would win. But, Zootopia was so popular and so well loved and such a good movie. Anyways, I mean, it's a tough field out there. So, but I think it's going to be Zootopia for animated film. But Best Supporting Actor, I think if there's anyone who's kind of like a shoe-in for something right now, that's Mahershala Ali for Moonlight. And this may be one of the only ones that Moonlight wins. I mean, yeah, they may be a screenplay award, but it's nominated for a lot. I don't think, and spoiler alert, because when I talk about Best Picture and Best Director, I really don't think that the Academy is going to go for Barry Jenkins or Moonlight for Best Picture. But I think this guy has it in for Best Supporting Actor, and he's up against a good field. I mean, I'd love to see Jeff Bridges win. But no, I really think it's going to be Ali who's going to win this one. Now, Best Supporting Actress, this is another one that I think's pretty easy to predict. And a lot of times the Best Supporting Actor and Actress categories are the ones that are a little bit the surest bets. Viola Davis for Fences, she's up against some really good actresses, and when you want to talk about the Oscar so white controversy from last year, this category alone, you got three women of color in for this award. I really think it's going to be a Viola Davis, because that's the one of all the films I saw and all the performances, hers is the one that made me stop and really look at the screen. I mean, she does a great job in this movie. Best Actor, I think it's kind of up in the air. I think there's a little more traction now happening for Denzel for Fences, but I really still think that Casey Affleck is going to win. I mean, he's been the odds-on favorite from the beginning, and he does a great job in Manchester by the Sea. Best Actress, this is another one that's up in the air. I would have said originally I was going to say it would be Natalie Portman for Jackie, but I think some of the buzz has died down for that. So this one's kind of, I think some people are thinking Emma Stone, and I'd love to see Emma Stone win for La La Land. That's one of the only awards for La La Land I really want to see, when I don't think Emma Stone's going to get it. I actually think Isabella Huppert's going to get it for Elle. I think that one is going to be the shocker. That's going to be the surprise, because I think they want to give it to her. And she's respected, and she's French. I mean, they got all that going for her. Now, the Best Picture, Best Director. Now, sometimes in the past, you have them split, like when Ang Lee won for Best Director of Brokeback Mountain, but it was Crash that won for Best Picture. You see that happen. It's not uncommon, and we've had those happen even very recently, you know, with Gravity. But I think this time it's going to be the same guy. It's La La Land, and it's going to be Damien Chazelle, who, the director, as well. For no other reasons, no, I don't care how much controversy Oscar So White gives you. I don't care how many social issues you touch on in your movies. The one thing Hollywood loves more than anything else is movies about itself. And this is the most narcissistic movie that has a throwback to old movie musicals. It's about the dreams and the love of Los Angeles and the city of angels. I mean, it leaves it on so thick. It's such a given. And like I said, the musical angle is also very popular with the Academy, because they're like 186 years old average age or something like that. So those are my picks for Oscars. Check back next week to see how accurate I was. Now, let's talk a little bit about the box office. Last week, I said the Lego movie was going to make $40 million for the 4-day. It made 40, almost 43, which is really good. And 50 Shades Darker held on well. I mean, well compared to itself, not compared to the previous film, which it's making, it's running about half of what the previous film did. And I said that the Great Wall would probably come in with less than 20. It just barely cracked 20. It was like 21 and a half. That's, you got to go to the 4-day to get that. And John Wick Chapter 2 almost beat it, had almost 19 million in its second weekend. Fist Fight struggled a little bit more, ended up bottoming out the top five for the 4-day with 14 million. Now this week, I think the one that's going to surprise is Get Out. I think Get Out's going to do the best. A lot of people are saying 20 million. I'm going to say 30 million. And here's why. We have not had a movie for a black audience in a while. Even so much as the Academy Award films like Fences and Hidden Figures have been out there. The sort of like the crowd pleasing. I mean, Hidden Figures a bit as a crowd pleaser, but sort of like the fast food genre picture. You haven't had that for a while in terms of black cinema. So I think you're going to get a lot of that audience coming to see it. And also, you know, traditionally African Americans tend to really like horror movies as well. And it's been shown time and again that if you make a movie for a black audience, they will come and see the movie. And I think you're going to get that this week. It's not like a big, you know, football week. I don't think there's going to be terrible storms anywhere. In fact, we have quite lovely weather here in Ohio. So you're going to have a lot of people looking for something to do. And also, it doesn't hurt that the other new releases are going to be kind of soft. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. You've got Hacksaw Ridge, which is one of my favorite movies of 2016. Fantastic war movie about a conscientious objector who still went to the Battle of Okinawa. There's also Manchester by the Sea. I was talking about that with Casey Affleck. If you haven't seen his performance, it's definitely worth seeing. Nocturnal Animals, which has a couple nominations to it. Of course, one of them being Michael Shannon for Best Supporting Actor, who I would love to see win. He was my favorite performance. I still don't think he's going to win, but it's worth checking out. And then a couple other cleanup ones. You've got Bad Santa 2, and then Doctor Who, The Return of Dr. Mysterio, which was the Christmas special. And that is it. I need to go for the week and go watch the Oscars and relax this weekend. You all have a great weekend. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Logan, The Shack, and Before I Fall. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.